Well, we have reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning, Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. And here beside me is Jim Gilbert, back just fresh from PDX.
That's right. Flew in this morning from Salt Lake City, Utah.
And hopefully you had an uneventful flight.
It was a great flight.
You know, I was just thinking while we were playing our theme song, which is The Who, and drummer Keith Moon, the departed Keith Moon, but his name comes up this week, or at least in the past week, with the passing of Ginger Baker, another drummer who's always mentioned in the same breath as Keith Moon, although apparently, Ginger Baker wasn't all that fond of Keith Moon. But anyway, maybe we should get some Cream or Blind Faith coming on here at some point, but not today. Well, enough of that editorializing. No, we have more to do. I have What's Annoying Me, but that'll be coming up in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. It's actually not an annoyance. It's more of a, I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got Jim here now to catch up from missing last month. He was flying around the world again.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty amazing, Glenn. The world is a really big place, and the cultures and food crops and stuff are quite diverse. And,
yes.
It's amazing. This trip took us to Germany, Italy, two places in Italy, Uzbekistan and South Korea. And Uzbekistan, South Korea was where we went earlier this summer.
Oh, right.
And we went to follow up on some things we learned from our first trip. So really fascinating journey, sort of overwhelming almost, because so many new friends and new things to see.
Yeah, hopefully
crazy.
Grow.
Yeah.
Eat and grow.
Yeah.
Grow and eat.
Yeah.
Well, we've also got one of the two big Home Orchard Society events coming up on this weekend.
Following weekend.
Jeez, I can't keep my days straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jim, they say there are two types of people in the world.
Only two?
Well, I already blew it. They say there are three types of people in the world. Those who can count and those who can't. Yeah.
Well, I've been counting a fair amount because I know the travel dates I'm on. And,
yes.
So I know that the Home Orchard Society, I won't actually be here because I'm taking another journey.
Oh.
It's a short and long story, but Basically I'm going to Siberia to see three old friends who none of us are getting any younger, and I still have a Russian visa that's good till March, and I don't want to go to Siberia any later than mid-October.
Yes.
So I'm going to go.
So you're taking off here again in
within
a couple of weeks, yeah. Well, in any event, we will be talking about that and what you can do and taste. It's just such a wonderful opportunity. I've been turned on to so many different flavors of common fruits, even.
Yeah.
And enjoy them every time I bite into one might be a Spylicious apple that I grow. And I can't remember if I also grow Spy Gold. So that must be the combination of Northern Spy and Golden Delicious.
I would think so. Yeah.
And then the Spylicious would be the Northern Spy and Red Delicious.
Probably an improvement on both of those.
The
delicious
wonderful
ones.
Apples. Yeah. And I tend to like sweet apples, and that's what they are.
Cool. Great.
So we'll talk about that.
And this might be an opportunity to mention the All About Fruit Show, because that's where people will have a chance to try and taste.
Yes, that's what like I was getting at there.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
We'll talk about that. We will have a garden stumper coming up at half past the hour. We will also try to talk about what we are harvesting now and what's going on Jim's farm. 40th anniversary of that, by the way.
It's kind of hard to believe.
Northwoods Nursery.
Yeah.
Has it been called that since the beginning?
Since the beginning.
Yeah.
1979 in Hood River, planted the first seeds.
That was the same year I started my Swedish pancake booth.
No kidding.
Yep. Yep. No. We're just a bunch of old timers here, Jimbo.
Right.
And Jim made, we'll talk about a little bit more in depth on Jim's travels, what he found there. And we didn't have a chance to do this last month, but is it possible to store potatoes in Portland for any length of time?
Good,
all right.
Good question.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Speaking of questions, if you have any, this is the number, 503-231-8187.
And for all the listeners out there, this is a unique gardening show. I'm not sure, but I think it's really the only one that's happening on at least on a wide range of broadband. I mean, at least where you can listen to it and
yeah.
stream it and stuff. And so we look forward to having
well,
questions.
Good.
You know. So.
All right. Well, this is. I'll launch right into this. Is not really an annoyance. It's just I wonder why this is and why it keeps going. If the time was 10 minutes past 2, you would say 2:10 or 10 past 2 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's 5 minutes past 2, what would you say?
2:05?
Yeah, you would, but you'd never say 2:05.
No.
You always put that O in there.
Mm-hmm.
And why O?
Well,
it's
why,
a zero.
Yeah, I know, but you know we use O a lot in numbers in that
like
number.
Like 503.
Like O is a single syllable, so to speak, and zero takes two, so we, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you were consistent in that and you had a number to or something to write down, a serial number,
right?
You know, what's zero and what's O?
I try to make a point to use zero when I'm talking, when I'm explaining numbers to people.
Yeah. 505. I mean, 503.
Yeah, 503.
I always do that, but I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's three types of people. All right, so that's not really annoyance. It's just kind of wondering why that is.
Yeah.
What time is it? It's 2:05. I'm going to start that.
Why do they call chickens chooks in New Zealand?
Well, they've got a word for cool. different for everything.
Let
that's
the chooks out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Another time I might have to, maybe I've mentioned this before, of my interpretation of which came first, the chicken or the egg. Have I talked about this before?
No, not in my memory.
But well, that doesn't mean much anymore for us, Jim.
No, I know. So yes, go ahead, Glenn, if anybody else out there.
Well, you know, this is almost like garden philosophy we're talking here, not gardening. I'll save that for another time.
Okay.
But it's the chicken came first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'll wait for that explanation when you're available.
Or was it the egg? No, it's the chicken. Okay, well, let's see here. Our plant of the month is a new one for us.
Yeah.
I checked my records, and we haven't talked about this.
Good. Well, that's exciting.
Really, magnolia vine.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, too.
Now, is this something that we eat the vine?
No. Do you want me to talk about it now?
I do. This is the time, our plant of the month.
All right. So, magnolia vine are sometimes called... magnolia vine, matrimony vine, schizandra vine. Schizandra chinensis is the Latin name, but the Korean name for this is omija. So anyone out there who speaks Korean might relate to that name, and I think that's a really nice name, and we may start calling it that because I like it a lot.
Well, that's, you know, with magnolia vine, I conjure up something different, like it's non-edible.
Yeah, definitely. So
for marketing standpoint,
right. And omija is a pretty cool name. And so what drew us back to South Korea on this journey we just took, we were originally just going to go to Europe, was a festival, an omija festival, the only one we know about in the whole world. And I first found out about this plant probably in 1985 or a little later because it's grown widely in the far east part of Russia. And the Russian name for it is limonik, which means little lemon. and it has a very lemon-like flavor, and that you can make a very healthful and stimulating tea from the leaves. The Chinese name, and maybe the Korean name, I'm not sure. It's commonly called the plant of or fruit of five tastes, and it's very, very unique. A red berry growing on a vine that likes some shade. If I were going to grow that here in Oregon, which I am growing it here in Oregon, I would probably put it in a place on the east side of a building where it doesn't get the hot afternoon sun. It seems to not like that so well.
It needs trellising?
Needs trellising. It's a vine. Fairly vigorous, easy to grow, no issues with it. We harvested fruit this year off of ours. As I said, the fruit has kind of a lemon-like flavor, but the product that we discovered in Korea, and we had tried this before, but not on such a scale, was a syrup. And they make juice from it too, and the juice is very good, but the syrup is pretty cool because what you do is you take the berries and you mix them with equal amounts of sugar by weight and let it sit. And they said let it sit for 100 days. I think I don't have the patience to let it sit quite so long, but what happens is that the sugar pulls the juice out of the berry, and you end up with this really, really delicious syrup. That then what I do with it is I'll take a small amount, put it in the bottom of a glass, and then put sparkling mineral water in on top of it and mix it together. It's better than any soda I've ever drank. Really, really good.
Are the berries just edible as pop them in your mouth?
They're pretty tart.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, people do it, and my Russian friends tell me that that doing it that way, when eating the berries and even the seeds, will give it's like a stimulant. I mean, it gives them the same kind of like boost that coffee would give them or something. I've not really experienced that, but I drink a lot of tea, so maybe I'm immune to that. Yeah, I'm already jacked up. But it's a beautiful, it's a really nice vine. And as I said, it grows, and it's very hardy. I mean, if anybody's listening from Minnesota, go down to minus 35 to 40 degrees, no problem.
And what's the Korean name again?
Omija.
Omija.
Omija. So with this festival, it was also pretty interesting because there were a number of growers there selling the berries. And the way they were selling them was in these large plastic jugs, which I have never seen in America, like probably a 2 or 3 gallon jug, and they either sold just the berries in the jug or the berries mixed with sugar, and you could just buy the jug with the berries and sugar and take it home and wait for it to make the syrup.
And these berries are what? How big?
How big?
Smaller than a walnut?
Oh yeah, they're small. They're
like a filbert.
Smaller than
hazelnut?
Smaller than a blueberry.
Oh, smaller than a blueberry.
Yeah. They grow in clusters, large clusters of fruit.
And how does one harvest them?
Well, what I do is just cut them off, cut the whole cluster off, and they come off pretty easily. You can sort of strip them off too, with your fingers. They're not hard to harvest.
No barbs.
No thorns.
Okay, Omija, also known as Magnolia vine,
Schizandra vine.
Schizandra vine. That's kind of nice too.
Yeah, but that relates to its Latin name, Schizandra chinensis, of course.
Okay. But yeah. All right. Well, that is our plant of the month, magnolia vine. Okay. Well, now we'll get into our music again, and I'll give you a recap here because we didn't get to play any music last month. Too many questions, which is just fine. But since I had this nice set already pulled, I'm doing it again. I mean, I've got it ready. And the theme last time was magic, because we were talking about composting. And it's just magic of the wonderful qualities of compost, taking, what would be otherwise waste, making it into something not only useful, but very beneficial.
Right.
So that's kind of magic, alchemy.
Yeah,
you know, turning.
There are other magical things out there, and this is good. I like.
Yeah, okay.
Magic.
So anyway, magic is our theme today, and we will start with. You already heard a little bit of it, and we won't play much of it. But this is from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. I don't know this from maybe their first album, second album, UFO Tofu, and this is called Magic Fingers. Thank you. Okay, well, we cut that down because we've got things to talk about.
That's right.
Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. I was just telling somebody about the drummer there, Wooten. Oscar, Victor Wooten plays drums, but it's not a regular drum set. It's a drum tar or something like that. It's shaped like a guitar. And he plays, what you're hearing there is all finger done on the strings. And
the drum tar.
Yeah, I think that's what he calls it.
Wow.
My wife and I saw him in concert, them in concert, late 90s. Mm-hmm. The Zoo. It's a great concert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also was great is one of our apparently very loyal listeners. Mm. We'll mention him by name. Can we?
Robert Moore.
Can we say that? We'll call him Bob Moore.
Okay.
Hide his identity.
Okay, right.
Well, apparently he's a longtime listener and loves the show, which we appreciate that even just by itself. And he sent a nice letter along with some goodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Persimmon relish, little bobbies, uh-huh. Persimmon relish, uh-huh. Nice pint of canned persimmon relish that Jim and I are going to
find some way to trade.
Yes, right. And there's this Bob who also sent this this plate of...
Well, that's what Paul said. That Paul, not, Paul, there's a
there's
plate.
Only half of them here, so I wonder if Paul...
eats them on his way down
no,
here.
No. Yeah, they're sliced, nice-looking tomatoes with
maybe cheese
some yeah, some kind of cheese, and I'll bet you that's persimmon relish on the top.
Oh, yeah, I bet, huh?
So we will partake at this when we're done, so as not to slop our fingers all over everything.
That's right. But slurping sounds on the radio.
Yeah. Oh, that smells good, too, now that I've uncovered a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So, Mr. Moore, thank you very much.
Yes.
I appreciate that, and yeah. We will...
Thanks for your note and talking about persimmons and...
yeah, he says that it's a family... a Northwest reinterpretation of an old Southern recipe. My mom made it, but I know she got it from an in-law from Tryon, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He, as he says, home to, among others, Nina Simone.
Oh, well, I wonder okay. If she, maybe she sang a song about it.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
Well, more on that later. Okay, now, All About Fruit Show.
All About Fruit Show.
Like I said, one of the two big events.
Yep.
You can taste it now, you can build it then.
Yep. For all of you fruit nuts out there, which I imagine there's a few listening, this is the show. This is the time. And don't miss it. You know, it's a lot of work goes into this, and you have an opportunity to try so many cool varieties of all kinds of fruit. Talk to people who you not have any other chance to talk to, probably.
I mean, if you think you're a fruit nut, you know, talk to somebody who's there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, they're like Jim, you know, they're just nutty.
Yeah, that's right. They're nutty fruit nuts. And, you know, so there's an advice table. So if you have questions about how to grow stuff, and Glenn will be there.
On Sunday.
Okay. And that actually is the weekend after this coming one. Just a minute. Let's get the date out of the
right,
way.
So right. It's 19th and 20th.
Okay. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Clackamas County Fairgrounds in beautiful Canby, Oregon, around which there are some cool restaurants like Nuevo Vallarta if you like Mexican food, and there's of course treats at the show itself. There'll be cider pressing there for kids love it, you know, take an apple and make juice out of it and then drink the juice.
Oh, that's right. They'll have that going there.
Pretty darn good.
That's put on by the Arboretum, is that not correct? Home Orchard Society.
Home Orchard Society, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not sure who specifically is going to press them, but...
Well, I meant that's the apples from the Arboretum.
Oh, yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. And besides the advice table and juice, there's also an ID table. So if there's an apple in your yard that you don't know what it is, there are people there who will puzzle over it and try to identify it for you.
I didn't go to the link, but I saw, I think I got a notification or saw it someplace that National Geographic did a story on the apple sleuths.
Oh, yeah.
Could that have been?
Well, there
we've got some old timers there.
Yeah. But, you know, there are some stories.
Young timers, too.
Young timers, old timers, yep. If you want to buy a plant, fruit trees or different kinds of plants, both Home Orchard Society and One Green World will be there. Selling plant material. It's really a great, and parking is free. Admission is not expensive. If you're by yourself and you're not a member of Home Orchard Society, it's $7. If you're a member, it's only $5. But you can bring the whole family as a non-member for $12.
So, or join for whatever it is, 25 or
whatever
something.
Extended family you've got, you know, bring them all because it's a great fun for kids too. You know, and turn kids on to fruit growing. It's a great thing to do. And if you join the Home Orchard Society there, then you get in for free.
Many reasons.
A lot of really good reasons, and it's just like we said, it's a one of a kind event. And thank the people that do all, when you get there, thank everybody for showing up, because there's a lot of volunteers too that do it, and you can even volunteer. And I know you're all sitting at your computers ready to type in the address for the Home Orchard Society website, which tells you more information about it and other things too, other events, and that's homeorchardsociety.org.
That's it.
And you'll be able to manifest all those fruit growing desires that been laying dormant.
Now, sometimes there are presentations.
There are
this time
too.
This time too.
Yeah, two a day.
Not a
lot, but two a day.
And so those probably midday-ish.
Yeah, I think 11 and 1 or something like that.
Okay.
On each day.
Yeah, but starts at 10.
Starts at 10.
In Canby, Clackamas County Fairgrounds.
Yep.
Take 99E.
99 East is a great way to get there. Drive down along the Willamette River. You know, after outside of Oregon City, it's kind of like a unidentified parkway, I would call it. It's a beautiful drive, and again, the park is a big parking lot, and people will be there to welcome you.
Free parking, I believe.
Free parking.
Yeah. Okay, that's All About Fruit Show, a week from this Saturday and Sunday.
That's right.
The 19th and 20th.
That's right.
And maybe I'll see you there, but Jim won't be there.
I won't be there. I will be.
You'll be
in on that day. I will be in Ulan-Ude, Russia, in Siberia.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give a couple of presentations to fruit growing groups. There's actually 3 garden clubs in Irkutsk, Russia, on Lake Baikal, and I'm going to give a talk to one of them, or maybe a group of them. Maybe they'll all come together. I'm not sure, but that will be fun.
Will that be in English or Russian?
I will do it in Russian.
Wow.
I'm sure there will be mistakes made, but
pretty impressive.
I love the language. I love speaking it whenever I get the chance. So, and I've got a little slideshow to put on.
In Russian, with Russian?
The slideshow will probably have English words on it.
But you can interpret that.
Yeah, sure. We're just talking about Oregon and how wonderful a state we have here. And I should mention just real quickly, if you don't mind, Glenn, that if people come down to KBOO, there's a little brochure that I helped produce on Oregon history, about especially the land use planning history of our state and how we ended up having such a wonderful state to live in. And I left a little dispenser with brochures in it here at the station.
Oh, good.
So.
All right. Now, when you talk to this garden club, will you have to translate dirt bag?
I don't know that I'll mention the dirt.
Okay. Well, maybe that'd be easier for you.
I could.
Because you just know near and
I just
well, near
it,
and near.
They could stream it in Russia, I think.
Yes, of course.
I'm not sure the time would work, though. You know, the time, it's quite a bit different time-wise there. It's like morning is night and night is morning. But
true.
We'll see. I'll check it out.
Okay. Well, that's the All About Fruit Show.
Yes.
And we are ready to go to the phones. Did you say Kay is on the phone? Good morning, Kay. You're with the dirt bag.
Oh, good morning. Thanks. I have a question. I want to put in a cover crop. I'm in the garden, and I'm an elder. So in the past, I've done favas, but quite often they get killed over the winter, and then I just sow them in spring. With regard to being a carbon farmer and wanting to cover the dirt with something green all the time, could you recommend a cover crop that would be easy for me to turn over? In the old days, I would do rye, but that's just too hard to turn over. Plus, I have raised beds now, and I don't really till that much, you know what I mean? To get the shovel in there and turn can sometimes just be a real chore. And I thought, well, I'd ask you. I picked up some crimson clover. It concentrates in the spring, and I was thinking of putting that in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have a recommendation?
Oh, I sure do. I'm going to save you lots of back pain.
Oh, yay.
And time, for that matter.
Yay.
In that it really doesn't, to me, and I'll just tell you what I do, and have okay. done this for, well, let's see.
Decades.
3 decades.
Is sounds good to me.
At my house in Northeast Portland, where I've been now mm-hmm. for 32 years, mm-hmm. Where I have, I don't know how many raised beds, 10 or 12, and mm-hmm. I have not rototilled those or even hand-turned those in more than 20 years.
Nice.
And I grow cover crop, and so what I do, and I grow fava beans and crimson clover. Mm-hmm. Those are my two clovers of choice, mostly because they're fairly easy to deal with in my method, and they...
Okay.
attract honeybees when they're when they bloom.
Oh yeah.
But I don't want to let them go
that.
to start forming seed pods, because then much of the benefit of the leguminous roots is negated. So cut them down before that. So mm-hmm. I cut them down, but I don't turn them in. I use
okay.
I either take the material away and compost it, or I leave it on the surface as a mulch and then just plant through it. And I leave the roots right in place. I'm not digging them up. I'm not even pulling them out. I cut
right.
the plant off and just leave it there. And
okay.
so in the soil, we have our nitrogen
mm-hmm.
and, you know, some root material, organic matter. But I would argue that we do more harm than good by disturbing the soil anyway. So, and maybe you can turn it in and you'll be successful. But what's really required to make green manure, as we say, is, you know, more powerful machines that'll cut through the green and the roots and, you know, make it small so it'll break down pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
But I've, you know, and 30 years ago, I'd turn it over, and then I'd have to wait and wait and wait.
Yeah.
You know, well, I can't plant in this. There's just nothing happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much better for the soil and you to
mm-hmm.
just cut it off and haul it to the compost bin or to leave it there.
Chop it. And
well, you don't even have to chop it, because I would do that on beds that I'd be planting, for example, tomatoes, where I'm planting them 2 feet apart.
Yeah,
so I
do a lot of greens and stuff.
Well,
and
then
in the soil.
In that case, I would remove the cut off green tops.
Okay.
But just plant around the roots.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing with the favas. But
mm-hmm.
I have this crimson clover, and it's so pretty.
Yeah.
And you know, bees do love it. So I thought, well, I'll get your advice. So
I cut it down with. Hedge loppers or hedge
mm-hmm.
trimmers, you know, hand
mm-hmm.
hedge trimmers, rather than a weed whacker
sure.
or line trimmer, which it would work
too.
But it throws it all over the place.
Oh yeah, no, I'm all it's, you know, my bed is 20 by 20 is my plot, and then I have four by eights, and then a couple little ones, so this will work great.
Excellent.
And then later in the summer it kind of comes up by itself. Now I do the buckwheat because I love that the bees love that late in the season. So, yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That answers my question.
Excellent.
And you're right. I have more free time now, so I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for your work.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Have a good day.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's move into our second musical break here with our theme of magic. This one, the thread, not only our theme but our thread, is now we're heading to Magic Sam. This is an old blues guy from I think he died in the 60s, late 60s, but this is a song called She Belongs to Me, Magic Sam.
I wanna tell you a story. My girl, she's the sweetest thing I
Magic Sam, She Belongs to Me. We'll try to get to that last theme, too, concerning music. Okay. You know what time it is, Jim?
I bet I can guess.
That's right. And are we ready to go on that? Yes. Okay. Time for the Garden Stumper. Okay, don't know which, why, and who, and where, but Jim's got a stumper.
All right, so all of the fruit nuts out there should hopefully be able to answer this
yes.
one. There are, most of the fruits we grow in the United States, there are, while there are wild relatives of them, they are not native to the U.S. However, there are a couple of Native American fruits that are quite popular in their native range, which is the East Coast and the Midwest. They're not berries. One of them can have fruit that weighs up to a pound and even more. And both are sweet, quite delicious. So the Garden Stumper basically is, can you name one of them? Extra points for two, and extra points if you have Latin names for them.
And these are being harvested now.
They are ripening now.
Ripening. Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
not, here in our region, probably not fully ripe yet, but close.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, one answer, two answers, three answers, four answers, five answers, or six answers.
Right.
And as yet, we don't have a prize.
No, but we've been talking about
yeah.
doing something, haven't we?
We have been talking about that. I need to clear this with the brass here.
Okay. All right. We won't tempt anybody with that.
All right.
Yet,
all right. So, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. Actually, we only need one of six answers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah. whatever
yeah.
answer,
yeah.
but
it's
as long but I
they
think
can
the
give
most
up to six answers.
But you couldn't give us the Latin name without the common name. You'd have to first is the
they
common
probably
name
know.
Of one of the two.
Yeah. Okay.
Both.
By great coincidence, that is also the number to call if you have a question. 503-231-8187. Okay. Are you harvesting anything? Well, we know we're harvesting. We'll better leave that until the well, what else are you harvesting these days
besides,
on the farm?
Besides the ones to answer to the garden stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't been there very much in
well,
recent
that's
days,
true.
But
yeah.
You know, apples, of course, have been coming on for a long time, and they're still coming on, and pears. But great bear heart. This was a great year for fruit.
Yeah,
really a lot of fruit. I'm really.
I was completely blanked on my quince.
Mm.
Zero.
Really?
I did cut off one big branch, but that was only maybe up to a third of the plant.
You know, I'm curious if any of the listeners have the problem with fire blight on quince, because it is definitely an issue for us. We're looking for resistant varieties, but if you have a quince that has a branch that all of a sudden, it seems like all of a sudden it turns black and the leaves shrivel, it's more than likely fire blight. And if that were to occur on your tree, it's important to prune that branch off and burn it or, you know, put it in the compost or do something. Probably
maybe even the garbage would be
garbage,
a better
but
idea.
Garbage is better.
Depending on how
yeah.
big it, the
yeah.
branch is.
Yeah.
Know.
It's a bad disease, and We've discovered a couple of ways of dealing with it. One is to give plants a lot of air so that there's good air movement around them, helps not prevent the spread of it. But quince are wonderful, and where I was in Uzbekistan, they have wonderful crops of quince there.
Well, I've seen quince trees just laden with fruit in my neighborhood, so I don't know.
And there's even a book written I can't remember the author's name right now, but I'll bring it next time. And it's cooking with quince.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the name of it, actually, cooking with quince. It's you can make a lot of really good things.
What's that about?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Okay, Sam has an answer, or so he thinks.
So good morning.
Good morning, Sam.
I'm going to say paw.
That's one.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yay.
Ding, ding.
So now can I ask a question?
Sure.
So I left a long rambling question about carbon sequestration, and this is probably not in your wheelhouse. But I got an answer of my own, and that is to make biochar out of the wood that falls in the yard. Got lots of down trees.
Okay.
The question is, what is the best material for biochar, softwoods or hardwoods?
Boy, I would think there'd be hardwoods, because there's a lot more carbon in a hardwood than there is in a softwood.
And there's a lot of more tars and distillates in like pine and fir, right?
You know, I have a good friend who's been working with biochar for a long time. I would imagine you could look that up online, but I actually owe him an email, and I will ask him and bring that answer to the next Dirtbag Show. Because I think it's a good question. Here in the Northwest, hardwoods are not common, and yet biochar, not as common necessarily, as conifers. But my guess is they probably make biochar out of conifer wood too.
I remember.
Well, I think it's,
go ahead.
I think it's the wave of the future.
From the past.
Yeah.
I remember going to Tryon Creek State Park a decade ago. And there was an exhibit about the iron foundries in Lake Oswego, because that used to be a big industry there.
Right.
And they would heat with, wood to melt these things. And that always reminds me some way of biochar.
Where did they get the iron ore from?
I think it was nearby.
Interesting.
Yeah. Used to be called something else.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Sucker Lake. That's what it was renamed, Oswego Lake. But okay, Sam, we'll try to have a report next time for you.
Okay.
And,
appreciate it.
And Sam, you wouldn't by any chance know the Latin name of pawpaw, would you?
No.
Okay.
It's all right. The prize is still the same. You get to keep it.
Right. You get the prize. But we still could entertain an answer of
yes, we're looking for one other fruit. Yes, okay. Thank you, Sam.
You bet.
Okay.
And just to be clear, I will tell the Latin names before the
okay.
end of the show.
Okay, well, that's try to remember to do that there, right. too. Okay, somebody wants to talk about wood. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. Maybe and maybe not.
Lee?
Yep, there you are.
Yeah, on the issue of wood, the amount of carbon char that will be produced doesn't have anything to do with whether it's a conifer or deciduous tree, the angiosperm, but on its specific gravity, its density, so that oak will produce more than cedar, but because it's a oak has a higher specific gravity,
mm-hmm.
but Douglas fir would produce more than cottonwood.
Right. Well, that's, I guess, what I was getting at when we talked about hardwood versus softwood.
Mm-hmm. But it's all dependent on the specific gravity of the species.
Understood.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's the highest specific gravity wood that we have around here? Is oak.
Probably white oak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it's a good firewood,
you know, I wouldn't recommend using, you know, the tree, but rather, you know, if you're going to prune, use branches. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of biochar. Somebody is telling me it's more related to ion exchange in terms of helping the soil rather than putting carbon into it. And I think the best way to put carbon into the soil is through mulch.
Yeah, or growing it, cover crops.
Right.
Yeah, and or just leaving all the residue.
One other thing that I wasn't able to mention last week, but I store zucchini, you know, the big war clubs, I've stored them as long as mid-February, as long as the rind isn't broken.
And where and how? Because this might be
next to my butternut squash.
And what about potatoes? We'll get to that early. Do you store potatoes?
I don't have good luck with potatoes.
Yeah, well, that's going to be my point, actually, that it's tough here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too warm?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're just not designed for it, really. I mean, I will sometimes be able to overwinter them for seed potatoes, but they, you know, they're green and they start sprouting and whatnot, but not
and
for
and then you
edible.
Put them in the ground, you know, the end of February.
Sure. Yeah. If I have enough time, but that's bee season and I'm getting busy.
Well, what else are you doing?
Well, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for your input.
Bye.
Goodbye. Okay, well, we do have a very knowledgeable listening audience, Jim, and it's very gratifying.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay, well, let's, before we get to our next and our last musical selection, let's talk about your travels and somehow the 40th anniversary.
Sure. All right. Well, the 40th anniversary for Northwoods Nursery, it's kind of hard to believe. You know, I don't think that it was 40 years ago that I planted those seeds, you know, up in that Hood River farm. I was there 3 years and realized after the second year when I had snow on the ground that was probably 4 feet of snow, and my little trees, as the snow thawed and refroze, it just stripped the branches off of them. I thought, I need to find a different location.
Yeah.
And that's when in 1982 I moved to our current spot.
Was there a second choice for where you're going to move to?
Well, I looked around at the time. My son was living in Portland with his mom, and I wanted to be within 45 minutes of Portland. So that was the circle I drew, more or less. And I just looked around, and the current spot was it was not at the time. Basically, it was cow pasture and a little tiny well and a house. The house was like for me, like where I lived in Hood River. It was 3 miles to the nearest neighbor, 3 miles to the mailbox. No phone, no electricity. And here I had a house, you know, that had phone and had electricity, and the mailbox is right outside the front door. What luxury, you know?
This is how the other people live.
So that's where it all started, you know, and it was the first few years were a little difficult because, I mean, I remember trying to water my first nursery stock where I didn't have enough water to go across the field. So I put I water half the field, and then I would plug up those sprinklers and do the other half.
Oh.
Stuff like that.
Fun. When you were young.
Yeah. But, so. You
know, okay. Well, 40th anniversary.
Yeah. And traveling. So traveling has become, you know, one of the things that as you may know, we owned the One Green World Nursery retail business and sold that 4 years ago, and that freed up our springs to travel around some, and also less work in the fall because we're not doing all the intense internet stuff we used to do. So it's been a really remarkable chance to go to places, and this most recent trip took us first to Germany, where we investigated Seaberry, because former East Germany was really where the most sophisticated production methods were developed, varieties were created, and we had the wonderful opportunity to see a friend, the man who basically initiated that East German work, Hans Joachim Albrecht, who is 87 years old, and it was so nice to see him, and we thoroughly enjoyed each other. It was just great.
Does he speak English?
Nope. But you know, we his son and and his grandson-in-law were there.
Okay.
And they helped translate. And we've known him for years. And you know, he speaks a little, but
okay.
It was just a great visit. And then that was in the evening when we arrived in Germany. And the next day we drove out to a very large seaberry planting in Germany, where they had numerous varieties and harvesting tons and tons of seaberry fruit. And then in the afternoon we visited a processing plant where they process it. And here we are in Oregon, in America, and we don't even know this fruit. And there it's popular, very popular in stores. The German name is Zandorn. If any of the listeners out there are interested in talking with me about getting a processing thing going here in the U.S., I think it'd be a cool product to put on the market. Seaberry juice.
It's all right.
Very high in vitamins. And
you can get a hold of me through KBOO, and I can get a hold of Jim.
Yep. And then from Germany, we went to Italy, first in the Florence area, where we visited a fig nursery where the man had over 300 varieties of figs. And anybody who knows Italy knows that figs are really popular fruit there. So that was really fun to visit and talk about fig varieties and realize that, you know, we have one really good variety here in Oregon. We have several, but I would say the best variety for the homeowner, based upon all the things that I've learned about them, is the Desert King or King variety, which is a certain type, you know, that ripens in midsummer and is very productive and vigorous. And anyway, so we went to Sicily, a part of Italy that we had never been to before. And a professor that we had met 4 years ago at a fig conference in Italy took us around the island. We actually heard Mount Etna erupt, which is pretty cool. And it sounded like, I thought it was thunder. And they said, no, it's erupting. And it's not dangerous or anything. It just goes boom, 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 boom. And it was pretty cool. And we visited an almond collection, almond variety collection with over 500 varieties in it, pistachio growing areas. Amazing. And a lot of these are grown dry land without irrigation. They hadn't had rain since February, and they were growing almonds.
February. Wow, that's dry.
I know, it's very, very dry. From there, we flew to Uzbekistan, where we visited a pistachio plantation, hundreds of acres, dry land farmed pistachios, all grown from seed, which was kind of interesting. I think a lot of them were planted in the Soviet days, because Uzbekistan was part of the Soviet Union, and they were selling the nuts, and people were like farming these out in the country. Really fascinating.
But no irrigation needed.
No irrigation, and dry.
When they're grown here in these United States, do they irrigate?
Well, that's a good question. I certainly know they irrigate almonds, and my guess is they also, in California, that's a big issue with almonds, is the water. And probably they have higher production with irrigation.
Yeah.
And pistachio, my guess is the same, that they do water them. It's interesting how these dry regions you can grow these plants. And then I mentioned, of course, that we went to South Korea, where we went to the Omija Festival.
Right. Omija. I'll forget that.
No, I'll remind you.
yeah, thank you.
But I really encourage people to think about doing this kind of travel. I mean, the world's a really neat place with all sorts of cultures and food and stuff. And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be expensive. There's ways to travel. We had 4 red-eye flights on this journey, But I'm sort of, used to it. I mean, sitting up in an airplane seat, get a couple hours sleep, and then try to catch up on it when you get to the destination.
Yeah.
But, it is really great to have friends in different parts of the world. And
well, that's you've got destinations with built-in stays, so that's, an agenda.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and and we're very focused, and so the people we meet and talk to are usually have common interests as we do. So.
Right. Okay. Well, then you will be back on. You'll be gone for the fruit show, but you'll be back for the next Dirtbag.
Next Dirtbag. Okay. Right. Tell you about Siberia.
That's right. Yep. Maybe have some jokes. Okay. Well, we have time then for our final third and final musical selection in this theme and thread of magic. And now we will hear from Ronnie Earl, virtuosic guitarist. But he's playing the music of Magic Sam, who we heard from 10 minutes ago. So this is called What Have I Done Wrong? That is some guitar from Ronnie Earl. We also saw him, my wife and I. Great concert. Okay, well, in our few remaining moments here, I asked Jim about a gardening question that a Dirtbag listener brought to my attention, and he took me into his community garden plot where he had some splotches on new raspberry growth canes. And they were kind of brittle then too, and broke off when he was trying to manipulate them. And I had some of that same problem on one of my varieties too, although it wasn't nearly as splotchy as his. But Jim has told me he doesn't know what that is.
Yeah, there are some raspberry diseases. You mentioned sunburn.
Yeah, it wasn't that hot either this year. So
it hasn't been.
Yeah, maybe we need to get a raspberry expert on here.
That would
or
be
a berry expert.
Any listeners out there that know about raspberries, that would be,
yeah,
could chime
we'll
in
have
on,
you
that
on here.
Sure.
Right. I think the chances of somebody calling in, Jim, are getting slimmer.
That's right.
So I think you should just answer the question.
Okay. So pawpaw is one of the Native American fruits, which some of the listeners sound like they're familiar with, and it gets very large. It's very delicious, very sweet. I could tell stories about pawpaws, but I'll spare that for now. And just know that it's related to a number of tropical fruits, like cherimoya and some others. So, but it's hardy, perfectly hardy for here and for the East Coast, and a cool plant. Its Latin name is Acimina triloba. The other fruit that I had in mind is the American persimmon, and persimmons are one of my very favorite fruits. There's Asian persimmon, which is more common in our region than the American persimmon.
The American doesn't grow natively here.
It's not native here.
To the Pacific Northwest.
But it's native to the Midwest. Interestingly enough, from a horticulturist point of view, there are two strains of American persimmon with different chromosome counts, and yet they're classified under the same Latin name, which my partner Lorraine and I puzzle over, because we'd think that wouldn't be the case. But the Latin name of American persimmon is Diospyros virginiana. The Asian persimmon is Diospyros cocci.
Uh-huh. There is a native persimmon growing about a mile from my house. And it's a pretty good sized tree.
They get to be big.
But they're pretty small fruit.
Yep.
I mean, they're about the size of a walnut.
Big tree, smaller fruit. There are varieties that have larger fruit.
Oh.
We have them at our nursery, and we...
Native?
The Virginiana.
Virginiana. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, people have been selecting it for 150 years.
It's like apple. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And we've actually introduced some varieties, and we call it the Prairie Persimmons, that came... There was a man named Jim Claypool in Illinois who established a collection of persimmons. And sadly, there really hasn't been a lot of research done with this fruit. It deserves more, much more than it's gotten. But he was an amateur persimmon nut and planted a bunch of varieties, did some hybridizing. And from that, we have these varieties we call the Prairie Series. And they're large fruit, typically seedless and self-fertile. And really good flavor.
Yeah. Well, they are not ripe yet, Japanese varieties. But the pawpaws are. And in fact, on my run yesterday, I picked up three from the street.
Wow.
And these were, I'm not going to tell you where they are.
No.
Because I'm going to have to do that. But it was the largest pawpaw that I've ever seen.
Wow.
It was a big one. It was bigger than my fist.
Yeah.
Well bigger than that.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That must be a variety, because to be that large, the seedling...
Well, there weren't very many on the tree, too.
Yeah.
The other ones were a little smaller, but I think all from the same tree.
Probably knock on the door of the owner of that tree and find out if they planted a variety.
Yeah.
It'd be very likely.
I mean, I'll give you more information offline.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the plant's very happy here. In fact, a little bit of my own history. When I first started the nursery, I used to drive into Portland from Hood River. I was also co-managing a co-op store in Hood River, and I would drive into Portland. And one time I was in and I saw these big stack of boxes of persimmons. And I asked the wholesale produce place. I asked the guy there. He said, "Well, where'd those come from? California?" And he said, "No, my uncle grew them southeast Portland." and that's how I met Peter Dana. And the name Peter's Honey Fig, which some people may be familiar with, came from that meeting, because Peter had a Sicilian fig that he brought from that region that he really loved. And he also had pawpaw trees in his parking strip and persimmon trees in his parking strip. And I was amazed. I had never really seen them before. So,
just a youngster.
Yep.
Yep. Right. Okay. Well, we're out of time, Jim.
Okay.
It was great to have you back. And look forward to November. I guess you'll be in town.
I'll be in town.
All right.
Look forward to seeing you.
Second Wednesday of the month. I think that's 5 weeks from today, rather than our customary four.
November 8th.
Oh, will it be the November 8th? Okay, then 4 weeks.
I think. Well, we'll check.
I can check the darn calendar.
Yeah, we should do that before we show up at the station.
Yes. Okay, well, thanks for listening. I hope that you were able to contribute to KBOO in our absence with our membership drive that we had last month. So that's our story. Be well. Thanks, Claire.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:59. Coming up next is some news, even some Miles Davis. So stay tuned. But first, this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the American Bamboo Society Annual Conference, Wednesday, October 16th through Sunday, October 20th at various locations around Portland. The American Bamboo Society Annual Conference features speakers and workshops, building with bamboo classes, and also tours of bamboo gardens, silent auctions, and more. Again, that's the American Bamboo Society Annual Conference, Wednesday, October 16th through Sunday, October 20th, at various locations around Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
K KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Latin American Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater. The next film in the series, The Good Girls, Las Niñas Bien, is showing Wednesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. Surrounded by extravagant luxury, Sofia lives in opulence in 1980s Mexico City. However, when Mexico's 1982 economic crisis hits her husband's business hard, the elegant lifestyle Sofia is accustomed to falls to pieces, and her arrogance turns into desperation. Again, that's The Good Girls, Las Niñas Bien, showing Wednesday, October 16th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.